this is really as part of our quest to strive towards clean governance. Next to Advocate Moofe, it's Mr. André Hernand, who is the Chief Finance Officer. Next to André, it's Mrs. Caroline Mamburu, Advocate Caroline Mamburu. She's the Deputy Head of SIU. Next to Advocate Mamburu is Mr. Leonard Lekheto, who's the Chief National Investigating Officer. And next to Leonard Lekheto is Dr. Jerome Wells, who's the Chief Legal Officer. Next to Jerome is Mr. Chulani Mkungu, who's the Head of Risk and Governance. Who will be joining us shortly is Mrs. Nazrin Pando, who's the Head of Communications and Stakeholder Management. Thank you very much, Shani. Chairperson, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we start off our presentation with the vision that says we would like SIU to be the state's preferred and trusted forensic investigation and litigation agency. And we have stated before this committee before that to achieve this vision, we understand that there are building blocks that we have to put in place, and those building blocks have to make sure that we push up our quest for good performance. As the mission, we want to execute towards our vision in collaboration with other agencies, and those agencies are those that are participating in the anti-corruption task team. Honorable Chair and members, we refer as we drive towards our performance, we are driven by the values that are reflected on slide number 3, which is integrity, cooperation, teamwork, professionalism, efficiency, independence, drive, and passion. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we strive to adhere to the principles and fundamentals of clean governance. As part of the annual report, there's a section on the accounting authority. We indicate there that the primary mandate of SIU is to recover and prevent financial losses to the state due to various acts of corruption, fraud, and maladministration, and thus we have powers to investigate and litigate. As part of the financial overview, which we will cover later on, we indicate to the honourable members that SIU received, I'm on slide number 5, SIU received a government grant from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development for the 17-18 financial year, amounting to about 346 million, to enable us to discharge on the following objectives. Objective 1 was to conduct effective and efficient forensic investigations. Number 2, we have to facilitate or initiate appropriate remedial action and collaborate effectively with other role players. During this year, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, we participated in the anti-corruption task team as part of the multi-agency approach. As part of our responsibility, we were asked to convene what's called Program 4 in ACTT, and we'll come later to that. And we then received CARA funding as ACTT, but it was channeled through the SIU accounting process. Those amounts are stated on slide number 6. 23 million was allocated to GCIS, which is the Government Communication Information Services, to enable the development of communication strategy, of anti-corruption communication strategy. Number 2, 8.2 million to develop the national anti-corruption strategy, 5.8 million for ethics and training of government officials through the Department of Public Service and Administration. 5 million was allocated towards the enablement of the establishment of special tribunal in terms of the SIU Act. Honorable members, we, in the quest of ensuring that we execute our mandate, on the slide number 7, we obviously depict income and expenditure. This will be covered again in detail by the Chief Finance Officer. But of importance is to just indicate that year-on-year comparison, we have consistently maintained a safe financial environment, ending up with a surplus of about 120 million for 2017-18, compared to the 42 million in 2016-17. The main rationale is that there has been quite a number of vacancies that the organization had to fill. And the next slide, which is slide number 8, really indicates around administration and operation. As you would see on the operation side, there has been quite an expenditure exceeding the budget. The rationale for that is that there has been a growing number of proclamations that we have received as part of the increased corruption reporting, and we then had to allocate more investigators and also the impact on the travel as our investigators travel to do the investigations. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we did indicate that we have driven towards improved performance, and we will show later on a year-on-year comparison. And we, on the slide number 9, we indicate to the Honorable Committee that the unit achieved 8 of its 9 operational targets, failing to meet only one. And we will talk to that one later on in relation to the actual value of money and or assets recovered. This target is linked to the strategic objective of facilitating appropriate remedial action. As part of our quest and strive to improve corporate governance, we made sure that we focus on improved financial efficiencies, compliance with legal prescripts, and as part of that, we have continued to see, and on slide number 10, that SIU, in the second year running, we received clean audit. And this audit has also been obviously signed off by our audit committee. The audit opinion given by the Auditor General, and we'll come back to the next slide, which is slide number 11. If you look on year-on-year comparison, we just started with the 2012-2013 year, up to 2017-18. 2016-2017, we achieved clean audit with no emphasis of matter. 2017-2018, we achieved clean audit, also with no emphasis of matter. And we are awake to this, Honorable Members and Honorable Chair, that this is really a challenge to us to make sure that we sustain the clean governance that we are depicting. There are indeed some of the findings that the Auditor General has found, but we are making sure that we clear those as the year goes. As we indicate on slide number 12, that we have developed an action plan to clear some of the audit findings as raised by the Auditor General during the audit, and is currently progressively against the end of financial year deadline. So we are hoping that we will clear those clearly out before the next audit. On slide number 14, Honourable Chair and Members, we show that that's the performance the performance for 17-18 year. We have achieved all the targets and only one that we did not achieve, which is the actual value of money and or assets recovered. The input towards that target is mainly from the civil recoveries, some of the acknowledgement of debt processes, acknowledgement of liabilities processes, whilst the other acknowledgement of debt and liabilities are being managed appropriately, the one that continues to elude us is the civil recovery. And the rationale behind that, and we have said it in this honorable committee before, is that we do queue with other litigants in the civil courts, and due to the court rolls, we find that we get court dates far ahead in the years, and we do experience some delays. But on this point, I need to mention that we have progressed quite well together with the Department of Justice to make sure that we establish the special tribunal. That tribunal, honorable members, is going to enable us to then have a focused approach on the civil litigation. It will mitigate this issue that I have raised. The next slide is really a year-on-year comparison, just to indicate a trajectory of improvement. On last year, we missed two targets. This year, we missed one. The next slide is again a year-on-year comparison, which this is the 2015 performance picture, which has since changed up to now drastically. And this is as a result really of a focused approach in ensuring that we drive a, a performance-driven organization together with all the members of the SIU. Honorable Chairperson and members, the next slides really go on page 33 of the annual report. We submit to the committee the number of reports that we have submitted to the President. If you look at the slide that deals with the performance information, which is slide number 14, the number of reports submitted to the President is 15, so it shows there that we have exceeded the target by 88%. And I'll come back to what is it that we are doing with the with the with the with the report. The next slide, which is page 67 and 68 of the annual report, slide number 20, we depict to the committee on the ongoing national investigations. The national investigations on the on page of slide number 20 and 21, there are about 14 ongoing investigations, and the state institutions are listed, and we are driving all of these investigations in line with our new strategy that focuses on ensuring that we turn around investigations as quickly as possible. We also, on slide number 22, depict all the provincial ongoing investigations, slide number 22 and 23. Those are all the municipal ongoing investigations, Honorable Chair and members. And on slide number 24 to slide number 25, we present to the committee the ongoing investigation on municipalities. And on slide number 26, we then depict the ongoing investigations on state-owned entities. I need to just mention on that slide 26, the investigation into the State Information Technology Agency. The investigation has since been completed, and we have a draft report which we are still ensuring that we discuss and give the right of hearing of all those who could be implicated in the report before we finalize it and send it to the President. The last, the number two, which is the South African Broadcasting Corporation, we have completed phase one of the investigation. The interim report is ready, and it's been ready to be dispatched to the President. We will then continue with phase two of the investigation. Honorable Chair, I need to just indicate in the annual report, which are the slides that are really not contained in the presentation itself, I needed to just make a note that there is a summary of civil litigation matters in the annual report, and you'll find that on page 74 and 76. These are all the matters that are ongoing, and in this one, I need to just state that the one civil litigation that we have reported to the committee before, which is around the Uganda civil litigation, we have at last received a court date. And the court date is in June of 2019. So that's part of the issues that we really face when we litigate in the ordinary court. And we are happy that there's a process to establish a special tribunal to assist us in that regard. Chairperson, on the governance side, this is on page 81. We indicated that we appeared before the compliance, before the portfolio committee. Chairperson, we have ensured that we continue to comply with the applicable laws and regulations governing the SIU. On page number 29, we are focused on ensuring that our risk management process runs in accordance with the approved enterprise risk management policy and framework. And in this regard, we have ensured that the key risks are highlighted and mitigated accordingly. And on that note, slide number 30. Slide number 30 indicates all those strategic risks. I need to just pause here, Chairperson and honourable members. On the first one, the key strategic risk, non-implementation of SIU remedial actions by the state institutions. This risk, we have analysed it, and we have put in place mitigating measures. The mitigating measures one of the referrals of SIU after investigations is the referral to the National Prosecuting Authority to ensure that the prosecutions follow. We have engaged with the NPA, and we have since agreed on the framework to ensure that we execute in accordance with our memorandum of understanding. And the NPA will execute accordingly. With regards to ensuring that the state institutions implement SIU referrals for example, disciplinary process, the reports that we sent to the president, over time, the state institutions had no sight of those reports, and as the members may have in the communication that was issued by the presidency yesterday, in fact last night, that communication is as a result of the interaction that we have had with the presidency, and the presidency has now started a process to release all those reports to the state institution, and the intent is to then follow up and seek to know what has happened to the referrals that have been made to the state institutions, whether disciplinary process, whether systemic risk implementation. We are really happy to see that process, because that would really ensure that accountability is raised and we make sure that there's consequence management where it's appropriate. Now, with regard to civil litigations, I've already indicated that we are looking forward to the establishment of the special tribunal. And the other one is referral to other regulatory authorities, which we follow up. So that's the red part on the key risk, on the strategic risk. But we've put in place measures to ensure that key risk is mitigated. If I move on the internal integrity unit, we do have a focused anti-fraud plan, which ensures that the fraud management in the organization is managed appropriately. And we also ensure that the integrity of our members is is also looked at. As we recruit new members into the organization, we ensure that they go through the integrity checks, and on an ongoing basis, that unit enables the organization to ensure that that there are no issues in the integrity space. The slide number 32 just really indicates that we have had 3 incidents of injuries on duty. We do report as part of the requirements, but all of those affected employees have received medical attention and continue to get the necessary support. The slide number 33, we indicate that there's an audit committee which continues to sit as required, and the audit committee is supported by the Risk Management Committee, by the Human Resource Management Committee. I need to pause here, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that as part of our reorganization, we are now left with ensuring that we come up with a focused governance framework model for SIU, and as a result, the Chief Governance Officer, Advocate Morphe, will be driving the space to make sure that we've got a clear governance framework with appropriate governance structures for the organization. On the human resource management, we have now concluded our reorganization progress, and now we are focusing on ensuring that employees are placed and the structure is appropriately completed. We have also focused on the implementation of the new value chain and the implementation of the standard operating procedures, just to ensure that there's standardization in how we do our investigations in the organization. We are also focusing on ethical and performance-driven culture in the organization. The next slide just indicates the employment equity stats. We are mindful that we have to, as we progress, we have to take into account the employment equity requirement, and on that score, we have our plan that we are executing to ensure that SIU is representative as required. Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, I will pause here and just hand over to the CFO, who will take the committee through the financial statement.
Honourable Chair members, on slide 38, the statement of financial position, also called the balance sheet. I'm just going to touch on some key figures. On the asset side, the debtors, or what is called receivables from exchange transactions, the net debtors standing at 59 million. I'll get back to what the gross figure is, less the impairment. On the bank balance, there's recoveries of 32.6 million, that's recoveries that the SIU effect on behalf of state institutions. But you will see on the credit side, on the liability side, down there's a similar payable recovery. So it's basically funds that we hold in trust, and then we pay it over to state institutions if we recover the cash. Our own cash equivalents are standing at 514 million at year end. Then some non-current assets is really office equipment, vehicles, and some software standing at 42 million, bringing the total assets then to 651 million around it. On the liability side, it's really just the short-term creditors, the day-to-day creditors, 36.4 million, some provisions, bringing then the total liabilities to 104 million, and the accumulated surplus in the balance sheet to a figure of 546 million. And Treasury, National Treasury, has approved in August the retention of the surplus according to the BFMI. Moving over to the statement of financial performance, or traditionally called the income statement, on slide 39. Income really consisting out of two main figures. First of all, the rendering of services in terms of Section 5 of the SIU Act. That is where the SIU physically invoices at a rate similar to the private sector, the institutions that is investigated. The income as a result of that, 286 million. Some interest, bringing the total income or revenue from exchange transactions to 303 million. Then the government grant, 346, total revenue 658 million. on slide 40, the main expenses, SIU really being investigation agency, employee-related costs, the HR cost is the main figure, 362 million. We had to increase the debt as a result of the challenge in recovering the debt. We had to increase the debt provision for impairment with a figure of 51 million in the current financial year. The leases, that would be the eight office leases that the SIU has got a footprint across the country, 36 million, and then some general expenses, rounded to 80 million, bringing the surplus for the year then to a figure of 121 million in comparison with 43 million for the previous financial year. On the cash flow statement, on page 41, the important figure, total income cash, this is cash received, 673 million. Payments expenditure, 448 million. Going then on page 42 to the important figure on the cash flow, the net cash flow from operating activities standing at 225 million, which is a huge improvement in comparison to the previous year of 65 million. The cash and cash equivalents at the end of the year, as depicted in the balance sheet, 514 million. Just quickly on the statement of comparison of budget and actual, this is comparing the actual expenditure and income versus the budget. The rendering of services, the final budget was 211 million, the actual was 286 million, in other words, a 75 million positive variance, and that is as a result of the higher number of proclamations and therefore the higher number of investigations. That resulted in the positive variance of 75 million that was invoiced. On slide 44, the cut-off funds that was not budgeted for, the SIU applied in the 2018 financial year for a figure of about 6.5 million and it was received in the 2018 year. That was split over the 2017 and 2018 financial year and therefore the 3.3 million positive variance on the cut-off funds. Slide 45, I've basically already given the reasons. Slide 46, irregular expenditure. So the SIU has reported irregular expenditure that resulted from historical contracts that are in the process of being regularized. For the 2018 financial year, figure of 1.5 versus 1.8 in the previous year. And we are in the process of regularizing that. The individual items that makes up the irregular expenditure is depicted on slide 47. Travel management, the fees paid to the travel agency, 363,000. The short-term insurance, just over a million. And then the courier service of 78,000. The courier service has since been replaced on a transversal contract. So currently the SIU is using one of National Treasury's transversal contracts for the courier services. Total 1.5 million. Slide 48. No fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the 2018 financial year. Page 49. That's the gross debt less the impairment. So you would see that the gross debt is standing at just under 400 million at year end, in comparison to 418 million for the previous year. The provision that we had to make in terms of generally recognized accounting practices, a provision was made for 340 million rounded, bringing the net trade debtors then to 58 million. On slide 50, this is what the SIU has done. It's really embarked on an intensive exercise to recover the debt. There's been a lot of engagements. And the SIU submitted progress reports to most state institutions. As you would know, members, Chair, the presidential report is the final report, but in order to put the state entities in a position to pay us, we've provided them with output reports. And after that, we are following up on that in order for them to pay us. On the third bullet, we have received a total figure of 311 million in cash from the debt in comparison to 144 million. So although it's a huge improvement, it was really made up by one State Department that that paid us 173 million, which was obviously more than 50%, 56% of the total amount. The funding model and the outstanding debt remains to be a challenge, and from a financial point of view, was probably the most important challenge. We are in discussions also with Treasury to see whether the funding model could be redressed. And that brings us to the end of the financial slide. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Honourable Chair and honourable members, that brings us to the end of the presentation. But we need to just recap as quickly that we have seen that the adopted new strategy is beginning to give us spin-offs in terms of improved platform that we are also putting in place for reporting of corruption, maladministration, and malpractice. If you see the slide after the slide 51, we have introduced an improved whistleblowing platform. That platform will give both external and internal whistleblowers, public and everyone, to make sure that they are reported. So what do we do after that? We have put in place the new value chain, and the new value chain includes that once we have received the report and the allegations, we have a focused assessment of those allegations, and we put them through a proclamation process. The proclamation process, as we reported before, we have agreed with Justice and the Presidency so that we can improve the efficiency. And we're beginning to see that those improvements are really giving us a quick turnaround time. We are also focusing on ensuring that our investigators produce quality investigations. And in this regard, we have to make sure that we are appropriately resourced with skilled and experienced investigators. We also are mindful that historically, SIU's investigations have been known to take long. We need to be quite frank about that. But our strategy is beginning to show and prove that we can turn around the investigations as quickly as possible. We've also introduced interim reporting, where investigations take over a year. We have to make sure that we put an interim report, just make sure that we account for that particular investigation, and we want to ensure that we have improved reporting. This improved reporting, both internally, externally, and also to the public, and also to the portfolio committee. We want to produce quality outcomes. In this regard, I've already mentioned that we want to see improvement on the civil litigation process. We would like to see improvement on criminal prosecutions. We are aware that NPA, they are the owners of public prosecution policy, and they have to satisfy themselves that the evidence referred to them is fit for purpose, as it were, fit to be brought to court for prosecution. And in case there are those further investigations required, we would like to be alerted to that so that we can close that. We would like to see action on the disciplinary actions referred, and in this regard, we were quite happy to see the statement released by the Presidency yesterday. Referral to other regulatory authorities, and as we do our work, we do systemic recommendations just so that we are proactive, we assist on an advisory purposes to assist the state institutions to improve their risk mitigation, to improve their planning process. And we would like to ensure that we follow up so that the impact of the SIU work can be felt and we recover the stolen monies and assets and we make sure that there's consequence management in this space. Honourable Chairperson and honourable members, thank you very much for the opportunity to present.
Before I hand over to honourable members, head of the youth, may you kindly address this? There are a lot of allegations going around, and which may impact on the integrity
and the good performance of the unit. So the ones which were, we also had over the media, electronic, printing and so forth, and also as members, I think we received something from CGE members, the Commission on Gender Equality. So maybe if we can also address that. But most importantly, so we like to commend Special Investigating Unit for having received a clean audit for second consecutive years. That's very commendable. And then another issue is the concern of, as an integrity institution, we're expecting you to have met to meet all the 9 targets. Yes. Unfortunately, you only managed to meet 8. And then you explained why, but you need to put it clear what measures are put in place to address this issue so that it doesn't recur in the next financial year. And also on your financials, personally, I'm very much concerned about this irregular expenditure, although since 2016-17, you managed to reduce it. But still, from 1.7 to 1.5, I'm still very much concerned, CFO, because from an integrity institution like yours, we don't want to see any irregular expenditure. Yes, especially in relation to supply chain management, non-compliance with legislation. And vacancy rate on page 96. It's really very, very high. 96 of the document is very, very high, especially on professional and senior management. The skilled and unskilled is within the acceptable norms of DPSA, but the senior management and professional is unacceptably very, very high at 20%. Honorable members, over to you. Honorable Smith, Honorable Breitenbach, Honorable Horn, Honorable Van Rooyen. I'll take the last two as and when they are warmer. Okay? Honorable Smith.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks to the presentation. And also to add congratulations on my side in terms of the clean audit. Just two issues. One, Chair, you have covered, and I'll cover it in a slightly different angle. The irregular expenditure on page 47. I understand 100% that it's historic. However, the service provider used without following supply chain management is a current one. If you look at it, move from 842 to 1073. So there's about a 200,000 current. My question is, are we happy with the effectiveness of our internal audit? Because that should obviously be a function of internal audit. So not so much worried about the reason why, but the going forward, are we happy with the effectiveness of the internal audit? And just as a matter of interest, do you have in-sourced or outsourced internal audit function. So that's the first one. And then secondly, you never touched it, CFO, the contingent liabilities. Just an age analysis of that contingent liabilities. Is it stuff that is coming on, I think it's about 1.5 million or something to that effect. But if you could just give us a sense of the contingent liabilities in terms of the age analysis. And then the final one from my side, Chair, is the debt that we have. Is that debt, or put differently, maybe you don't have it, if you could give that to us at some point, the breakdown of the debt in terms of spheres of government.
are you picking up a lot of problems recovering from local government, provincial government? Why do we have to have an impairment of so much? And clearly it's because people are either not paying or don't want to pay. So if you could just give us an indication of which spheres of government are giving you the hardest time in terms of collecting the money. Yabama Jefferson.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I have a concern with regards to your debtors book, and I'd like an update on the current status. You say that due to problems being experienced with collections, Treasury, the President, and the Deputy Minister of Justice got involved. Has this had any effect? And if not, what do you suggest that we do about it? Can this committee be of any assistance? And have any of the departments who say that they can't pay actually applied to Treasury for an exemption in this regard? Or are they just saying they can't pay? And again, what is it that we can do to assist in this regard? With regards to your remedial action, your unit, the NPA and the DPCI, cooperate under the umbrella of the Anti-Corruption Task Team. The Anti-Corruption Task Team has been spectacularly inefficient and unsuccessful. And it's apparent from the circumstances sketched in your report that these bodies communicate very poorly with each other, if at all. And what is being done about this state of affairs? The NPA is only now busy with an audit of the SECU, SIU cases, and you say there are 686 of them. And you say that is so because nothing is being done. So what is it that you do when you go to the ACTT meetings? If you go to them, and what is the excuse offered by the NPA? What happened to the MOU that you entered into with the NPA? And how is this being managed, if at all? The now defunct National Director Abrams told Scopa in April last year that 99 SIU files had been converted into 34 cases and had been allocated to prosecutors. What has happened to these matters? Is there some progress there? Do you know? Do you follow up on what happens to the matters once they go to the NPA? With regards to the SASA matter that's been in the news recently, your report and accompanying documentation did not initially support a criminal prosecution. And further investigation was undertaken. The prosecutor appears to have been reluctant to take the matter to court. What do you do to manage these situations where you've sent matters and years pass by in this instance 9 years go by and nothing has happened, especially in the light of the new revelations about from an insider in Basasa saying that senior members in the NPA were on their payroll, and other senior politicians appear to also have been alleged that they were. What do you do about following up these issues? You applied for CORA funding and you got it, probably because you're part of the ACTT and therefore qualify for CORA funding. Yet you have not spent your allocated budget. Why did you need the CORA funding and why did you apply for it? And what did you use it for if you're not spending your budget? Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Acting Chair. Maybe allow me first of all to latch on to the last question of the Honourable Breitenbach regarding the CORA funding. The way I understood it, the CORA funding was specifically requested in order to facilitate and fast-track the setting up of the special tribunal. And we see in the annual report that the SIU says it continues to work towards establishment of the special tribunal. today the words "we've been making some progress" has been used, but yet during May 2018 when we engaged with the SIU, we were given specific milestones that the SIU wanted to achieve in setting up this tribunal, and where we are now, the president of the tribunal should have been appointed in terms of their own targets, and certain arrangements should have been embarked upon with judge presidents of the High Court to provide logistical support so that ultimately in the period January to March next year the special tribunal could be up and running. So with the greatest of respect to say we continue to work towards and we are progressing is not good enough anymore, specifically if one looks into the reports in respect of the slow pace of litigation, and Advocate Mativi today again said that's because they are queuing with other litigants. So I think we must be appraised as to whether any of those specific milestones has been achieved in respect of the special tribunal. Specifically also, Madam Acting Chair, because the one target that has not been achieved, that of actual value of money recovered, obviously turns heavily on this very issue. So that's by way of a first question. The issue of the debtor's book, as had been raised by other colleagues as well, it is a bit of a worry that in our previous engagement, I personally, and I think the committee formed the opinion that the issue of the debtor's book is not that serious anymore. Good progress has been made, but yet today we, and in the annual report, we see that the debtor's book once again has ballooned extensively. So how did that happen, that during our previous engagement the indications were that no, that's not to worry of anymore, or it's not that big of a worry anymore? Then, Madam Acting Chair, the SABC proclamation was declared as a test case for improved turnaround times. So if we could be appraised as to what the SIU has now learned from that, and whether it's anything that they will apply going forward, specifically in light of the very old investigations. If one looks at the, for example, the 2010 proclamation on SASSA, of which there is no new information in this annual report, and maybe specifically the SIU must tell us whether that investigation has not been overtaken by other events and the Constitutional Court order regarding SASSA and etc. etc. and whether they are still going ahead, because as I said, there's no new information in the annual report. The same with the Department of Water Affairs. It's a 2012 proclamation, and obviously we, along with the whole of the country, are very much concerned by the continuous reports that this department, for all intents and purposes, is bankrupt because of maladministration. So then the question must be asked in terms of turnaround times, the fact that there's nothing new in the annual report on this investigation, and it's a 2012 proclamation, could the SIU not have prevented a whole lot of further losses through this department if this was dealt with in a more speedy manner? Then in terms of our own specific oversight, if we could be, even if not today, but maybe then in writing, be apprised of progress with all matters related to the Departments of Justice and Correctional Services. For example, there's the electronic monitoring system, which at some stage were hailed by Correctional Services as part of the solution of overcrowding. Now it's been stopped altogether, and it has been referred to you for an investigation. And it would seem that from Correctional Services side, they're not going to do any something more in respect of electronic monitoring until that investigation has been finalized. And then the same with justice and constitutional development, where there was that very interesting but serious issue of ultimately, as one would expect, wasteful expenditure pointing to really corrupt practices amongst officials. And then in respect of the proclamations, even though it's with outside of this financial year, could we be appraised as to whether there's anything, let's say, different that's happening in respect of proclamations since President Ramaphosa has taken office? Previously, you appraised this committee that proclamations in many instances are preceded by pre-proclamation, let's say, engagements with the office of the president. Is that practice still in place? Has it been streamlined at all? Then, if we're back to litigation, Madam Acting Chair, it is a bit of a concern that previously we were updated in full regarding all litigation matters. But that practice seems to have been stopped by the SIU now. So if we can at some stage be appraised of the progress regarding litigation, and then specifically the so-called Nkandla litigation last year, where we informed that because of the voluminous discovery and paperwork, no date has been set yet. If I recall correctly today, you said that the date is June 2019. Has all exchanges happened in terms of the necessary court documents? So and had there been any pre-trial actions taken place? June 2019 is still far away, but one would not like to see a situation where it has to be postponed because of a litigant not being ready on the one hand, and then secondly, could we be applied as of if there was ultimately any joinder applications? At some stage it was reported that the respondent in this matter considered bringing some joinder applications. And then lastly, in terms of the Memorandum of Understanding with the NPA, Madam Acting Chair, which the Honourable Breitenbach has also referred to, I would want the SIU to comment on the statement that ultimately and obviously the way they are going about business in respect of possible criminal matters is not working and it's not assisting. So since the beginning of this parliament, we've been hearing that they refer what they call case-ready dockets to the NPA. The NPA then says, no, we refer it back to either the Hawks or other investigative institutions which ultimately bring us our dockets. The question is simply, whilst the SIU obviously work by way of proclamations, do that fact in their view preclude parallel investigations from for example the Hawks? And shouldn't it be considered then by the SIU that the moment they uncover any information or evidence that point to possible criminal activity and something that might end up asking for criminal prosecution, whether the also other police investigative entities shouldn't be involved with immediately, rather than sitting with a situation now where if the last media reports are to be believed, there's more than 600 referrals stemming back years which the NPA has re-referred and really there's no justice ultimately. Thank you.
A ke lebogele modulasetulo ke tseye sebaka se ke Chairperson, I think it's important for one to reiterate your weight and other members' submissions by commending the unit for being able to retain the status of the audit outcome of the previous financial year to this financial year. And of course, Chair, there are obvious reasons, I mean, for one to be tempted and to commend the unit for that, because as you are all aware, and I hope we have all been following the take of the Auditors General around the performance of government, the entities, as well as departments, and his concern about some serious and perennial audit findings that have been made in other cases. So, truly speaking, we need to commend the good work as we see it. And hence, I'm reiterating your position and other members' position. Chair, under irregular expenditure, the CFO said that they will regularize as a way of dealing with these three historic contracts problem. Now, you see, regularizing can mean anything to anyone. I don't know what goes into a regularization process, but also one will be interested to know how is this regularization assist us to address this problem. Because, you know, as a layman, I might easily conclude that if there's something wrong about the appointment of a service provider, that contract must be terminated. So when you come with terms like regularizing, you might be creating the impression that you are going to manage. I'm just giving you a layman understanding, and I know you've got a better explanation. So, but I just wanted to share with the committee. I'm the committee. So as next time when you come, they are able to know what went into this regularization process that we are just referring to. It's a big regularization, but it can be misconstrued. So it's important that you unpack it. That's for the committee to make sense of what is it that you'll be doing to deal with this problem. And then there are two issues, Chair. The first is the organizational review process. There is a contract on that, but also there is a contract on the case management, automation of case management. Now, there are the details that one might be interested in. Is the duration of the contract, the budget, are we still on course, are we envisaging any deviation in terms of compliance on those two contracts. And then maybe moving out of the financials, my general comment on maybe that MTV will just give it, because at times when I followed your media statement, I got the feeling that you are not getting cooperation from other relevant role players. And now I see your approach is mainly aligned to the executive in terms of the required support. Now my question as a member of another arm of state, which is the legislature, is what is my role in that process? What is the role of provincial legislatures? What is the role of the National Assembly? What is the role of the NCOP in supporting your work? I think if that can be clarified, I think maybe one will be able to know. Besides, I mean, having to call you here to get the reports, I think it's important for our role to be clearly defined in this process. But also, Chair, I think there was one submission, because I'm more worried about matters that have been proclaimed on affecting our focus as a a standing committee. And I think, as earlier said by one member, maybe we should have a different approach to those matters, because, well, without necessarily having to preempt your question, but I think as a member of parliament, one of the things that we should be doing is to take an interest on those cases that are affecting our focus area as a standing committee. I mean, your state attorney matters up to your justice and correctional services matters. This committee chair, I think at some stage, must have a bias, because that's what I'm expecting from all committees of parliament in supporting your mandate. We should be taking keen interest on those matters that are affecting, I mean, our area of focus. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
thanks, Chairperson, and let me also say thank you to Advocate Mutiwe for his presentation. So my first clarity-seeking question will be about the SIU reference, because it shows that you had much frustration about the cases you referred to NPA since 2013 to 2018, according to a report. So I wanted to know the memorandum of understanding you signed with the de facto NPA director, Sean Abraham. Are you still on it with the new acting LDPP, or do you have any meeting about this frustration of piled of cases you referred to the unit, to the NPA? I wanted to know the status quo now. What's happening to those referrals? Because it's like there was a big challenge or some frustration by the previous director of public prosecution. I want to know whether you immediately engaged the new acting NDPP or not. Secondly, I want to know about the special tribunal, as you have made the template that you started to set up the system of money in March 2018. I think presently we want to know about the appointment of the president of the sub-tribunal, whether it has happened or not, as now we are in October. And according to your template and your preparation, you said by now you must be making an arrangement with the judge president about the support in terms of logistics. We just want to be updated so that we must push. We see whether do we have any frustration in between or not. The other question which I like to ask about the audit committee. I want to know why there is a delay to appoint the new service provider for internal audit. What is your problem of delaying? And again, the audit committee, why the audit committee is not listing the committee members, so that we must know how many members and their names and the meetings held during this financial year under review, how many meetings held by the committee, audit committee, and the issue of Ms. Madari's contract, whether it is terminated or not, or is still ongoing, as per your letter you wrote to us. So lastly, it's about the irregular expenditure. Want to know about the application of the consequence management. How far? What are you doing about this irregular expenditure within the unit? And also update us about the ongoing labor disputes in the unit. And I would like also to appreciate your AXA, Auditor General of Africa's report about clean audits. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you so much. Maybe let me also add to where Honorable Lauji has left off in relation to audit committees. You also show this committee their diverse qualification as a committee. And again, in slide 32, you remember you made mention of employees who sustained injuries at work. So I don't know whether SIU offices are you not complying with Occupational Health Safety Act, and what kind of medical attention did they receive? Because you just generically said they did receive medical attention. Maybe if you can elaborate on type of injuries sustained and what remedial action has been taken to see to it that the same situation doesn't arise. And then another issue is that of minimizing conflict of interest in one of the slides. In terms of the DIC document, it's page 85. Minimizing conflict of interest, page 85. Whereby if one of the employees intend doing business outside the SIU, is supposed to receive the head's consent and so forth. Up to now, you received 18 applications, then 7 were approved apparently, subject to correction, and then 11 still outstanding. If you may just elaborate, what kind of work do they normally apply to do outside their normal IU work? So yes. And on declaration of interest on the same page, I've observed that not all 515 have ever complied. 97% have complied with declaring their interest, and the remaining just mentioned consequent management. What kind of action was it taken to those who did not comply with declaring their interest in terms of the requirements? Okay. Thank you so much. It's up to you.
Over to you now to respond. No, this is in fact what we still had the remaining 20, so I think we established 45. But you did put your case within the very short space of time, 30 minutes instead of 1 hour. So I think the 30 minutes of 15 minutes is 45. Today I would like to hear Advocate Mambo's voice.
Now, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, thank you for the opportunity to respond to the questions. Chairperson, I'd like to start off with the allegations that you have referred to, have been referred. We have been made aware once more, this time through the Minister's Office, that the allegations have been sent once again, and the allegations cover the same, if not similar, aspects that have been raised since 2016, where we have responded comprehensively and even responded to this committee as well. Chairperson, it really concerns us. And we share the chairperson's view and the committee's view that if not really dealt with once and for all, it's got the potential to impact on the reputation of the organization. Chairperson, our view is we have responded comprehensively to those matters that have been raised, and it would appear that whoever it is that raises those issues, perhaps they do not get satisfied with the answers that we provide, or I really cannot put my hand onto it. But we will probably be engaging with the minister, as we are now providing even sort of the same responses that we have provided, and hopefully now we can probably give it another process with the minister's advice. But we are committed, Chairperson. We would like to have these matters resolved. We are satisfied that we have not contravened any processes, any legislation, or done any wrongdoing in the matters that have been raised, and we have provided our responses accordingly. Chairperson, we offer our cooperation and our commitment in ensuring that these matters are resolved. We are in the process of submitting yet again our responses to the minister, and the process will probably unfold from there. In terms of all the 9 targets, Chairperson, we share the same view that we would like 100% achievement of our targets. As we do our targets, we also assess what are the risks that are attendant to those targets, and we've identified those risks, and we put in place mitigating measures to ensure that we meet those. This target that we have missed invariably, amongst others, has to do with the process of civil litigation. And perhaps at this stage, through you, Chairperson, I take the opportunity to update then the committee in terms of the feedback we received in the establishment of the special tribunal. The progress that I referred to was as follows. We raised it with the Department of Justice that our legislation makes provision for the establishment of the special tribunal, and we then recommended and proposed that we re-establish, because this tribunal used to be in place long time ago and it ceased to function, and Justice agreed with us. They are responsible for court services, Chairperson. They are responsible in making sure that proposal is implemented and carried forward. And they do that in line with their processes. The appointment of special tribunal president is a process that's handled by the Department of Justice. The members that will serve on the special tribunal is also a process handled by the Department of Justice. But we are happy to say that we have been informed, and we have then confirmed that from Justice it has now been referred to the person. So Justice Department has done what they needed to do. It's now been referred to the President, so that the President can apply his mind in terms of the proposals. And as we sit today, and we'll probably just go back and get an update of where the process is. Because it has now progressed to the stage where at any time when the President is satisfied with the process followed, we can see the appointment of the Special Tribunal President and possibly all of those others who will serve on it. Chairperson, that's really the content and the nature of the progress that we were referring to. The vacancy rate, Chairperson, we share the same view that we need to make sure that the vacancies are approved, filled. In this regard, we have now completed our reorganization process, and we understand which roles would perform in which area. So we are setting ourselves up to make sure that the recruitment process will kick in. At the moment, we're still busy with the internal placement coming out of the reorganization process. So we would like to make sure that the vacancies are filled at all levels, and again, as I said, taking into account all the legal requirements, including employment equity. At the skills level, or semi-skilled chairperson, we are in the process, because the organization some years back embarked on a process to get in administrators, and they got quite a high number of administrators, which at the moment we have to make sure that they are reskilled, either in various areas, whether in investigation or in any of the areas that are the enabling functions, be it HR, finance, and IT. We have advertised internally to ensure that we invite them, so that those that are need to be skilled, either obtain a BTEC or a B degree. We've got a bursary service that would like to ensure that they access and assist them to skill themselves up, so that they can choose the area in which they would like to be deployed or appointed into. So that process is underway. We would like to make sure that it delivers its results, so that we are able to address this semi-skilled area. The union has presented to us a proposal that they are of the view that we need to insource the cleaners and the securities. So we will consider that proposal. But from a security perspective, we've got the landlords in most of our buildings. The landlord provides security, but we are mentioning it simply because it's part of ensuring that we skill our employees at all levels. So we'll consider that part that the union has presented. In terms of the Honourable Smith's irregular expenditure, we would like to make sure that we clear the irregular expenditure, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. We are in agreement that as an organisation that investigates irregularities, we need to ensure that we almost lead by example. Are we happy with the work of effectiveness of internal audit? Chairperson, Honourable Chair and Members, the internal audit is assessed through the audit process and the Auditor General, and we also have to make sure that we are happy with the output. Whenever they identify the control environments that are weak, the assurance areas that need to be audited, they produce an audit plan, and the audit plan is then executed in any financial year. So as we speak, the execution of the audit plan has been complete, in any financial year. But the effectiveness thereof, I think it's an area where we say, has audit really received its appropriate focus? At the moment, we've got before the reorganization, audit, governance, and risk were concentrated in one role. So the audit committee has also indicated that we need focus, we need to split the role in terms of risk and audit. We've done that, and we'll have a focused chief audit executive. The internal capacity has not really been developed over the years. And SIU has had an insourced service provider that was rendering the audit services, and the contract ran out sometime early or late last year, and simply because we had not developed the internal capacity as yet, we've gone out, and I think the question came up from Honourable Lauzi, the service provider has been appointed. And it's still an arrangement where it's insourced, but we would like to make sure that we develop internal capacity to do internal audit. In terms of the contingent liability, I'd like to just get the CFO to maybe make a comment But otherwise, if there's a need through you, Honourable Chair, members, to come back with further information, we can do that on this aspect. Yes. Contingent liability.
The origination of the contingent liability, it's fairly old. It originated in the financial years 2012 to 2015. That is the remaining portion that is still there.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chairperson. The breakdown of the data, Honourable Chair and Honourable Smith, I'm sure we can compile that and just indicate at what level. But as we speak today, the picture is that across government spheres, whether national, municipality, in many instances, we get the view that we used to get the view that says we have not received the report, so why are you expecting us to pay? We are happy that the report will now be released, and perhaps that will alleviate that process. But in some instances, it's municipalities mainly that are saying we do not have the funds, and the legislation says apply to Treasury, and we have seen applications to the National Treasury. Some apply to provincial treasury, but in our engagement with the national treasury, they do not consider these applications favorably, simply because they have the knowledge of the funding model of the state institutions, and they get satisfied that there is no cogent reason why they shouldn't pay. But also of importance, Honorable Chair and members, is that the state institutions were saying, we do not ultimately see what are the deliverables. What have you delivered for us to pay? And for that aspect, we have now created a practice where we just produce deliverables per invoice. Where when we send an invoice, we then indicate what are the deliverables, so that the CFO of the state institution and our CFO and our operations can sit down and say, this is what we have delivered against that invoice. We have begun to see that changes the situation. But it's still bleak, and I think this is the situation where now it calls for a broader discussion, which we have engaged the National Treasury on, which may then necessitate the review of the funding model. You know, whether the requirement shouldn't be that, you know, National Treasury creates this fund or whatever the case may be, that when we investigate and we charge against the fund rather than expecting it from the state institution. It's really just a thought at the moment, which will then be inputted into the legislative changes.
On the issue of book of data, maybe in terms of age, how long the age analysis of the data, because I fear in terms of prescription and others might have prescribed it, but you know better. Yes.
No, thank you, Chairperson, on that. And one other consideration we have, Chairperson, is that, Honourable Chair and Member, is that there's this Intergovernmental Relations Act, which says if we've got a dispute, then we must follow that process, because we cannot, like any other data out there, just go through the, you know, civil litigation process against another government entity. So we would like to ensure that that is the last resort of invoking the Intergovernmental Relations Act. So the question from Honourable Breitenbach was, has the involvement of the Minister and the Presidency made a difference? We would like to believe that to a limited extent it has, because it even including the interactions that we have had with the state institutions. But it still shows that there's still an issue, there's still a problem. So in this regard, I think this is the area where we would then look to the committee to say, you know, the extent to which we can give the committee a breakdown and the aging, and how is it that the committee can help. And it's all that from our side is for the committee to, you know, assist with asking and requiring the state institutions to pay. ACTT has been unsuccessful. We are agreed with the Honourable Breitenbach that there's there's efficiency issues around ACTT, and we have raised it, and we are aware as members of ACTT. As a result, we are reviewing the strategy of ACTT. There's going to be a strategy. The new chairperson, General Libia, has indicated together with us that we need to go and engage in a strategic review of ACTT. How is it that we foster this cooperation and coordination? Because it's been an issue. We have raised it as SIU that we needed to make sure that the referral system to the ACTT is firmed up and we understand who refers matters. Because ACTT is a structure that should foster cooperation between the eight entities. In terms of the referrals, our legislation says once we pick up evidence pointing to criminal act, we have to refer to NPA. That's the law. So from then onward, it's then an issue of what within NPA, how is it that they deal with our matter? Right? And we do understand that before a matter gets to court, there has to be a case registered, there has to be a docket, and all of that. Honorable Horn has asked, is there any preclusion whether the Hawks should not do at the same time? But in our legislation, we refer to NPA, and there has been an indication that some of the matters have been referred to the Hawks. So what have we done thus far? We've engaged NPA with the acting director of public prosecution, Advocate Ramaite, and the agreement at the moment is that we need to review that space in line with the MOU that we have to say if we send matters to the center, because the requirement has been to send matters to the center. So part of the resolution is that we could say when we send matters to the center, to the head of, to the National Director of Public Prosecution, we could then copy the directors of public prosecution in the provinces. And that could probably assist in fast-tracking the matters, because it looks like that's what they still do. We send matters to the center, and they still send them to the provinces. But there's also a realization that there is some prosecution policy that's required. And that prosecution policy would spell out on how these matters are handled. So we're looking forward to that, and that should really alleviate the situation. In the Bosasa matter, we've also picked up that the initial prosecutor has some views in terms of the evidence that has been referred to SIU, but it looks like there's a difference of views within NPA. But we are of the view, Honorable Chairperson and members, that if there are issues with the evidence that we have referred, and most of us have been prosecutors before, we understand how the prosecution works, is that if you get evidence and you assess and you are of the view that you cannot bring a prosecution on this matter, there is that area, if you have received a docket, there's an area where you write instructions to the investigating officer and say, you go and further investigate this aspect so that I can be able to bring prosecution on this case. So on that principle, we are saying if there is a gap identified in the matters that we have received, we would prefer that the matters be referred back to us so that we can plug that gap and refer evidence back so that it's ready in the eyes of the prosecutors, and then it can follow the process of registering a docket and rather than referring it to a new investigator who would then start afresh and delay the matter. But all of that is matters that would be included in the process with the public National Director of Public Prosecution. But we have since picked up that the prosecution in the Bosasa matter will probably be looked at and fast tracked at the moment. The CARA funding, Chairperson, part of the CARA funding was, yes, indeed, allocated for the establishment of the special tribunal. We are of the view that once that process of appointing the tribunal president and the other members who would serve on the tribunal, that process would then see that the funds would then be spent, because those funds would be spent on the equipment, human resource, which is really the funds that would be utilized by the Department of Justice. They were really, the funds were channeled through SIU simply because in terms of the legislation, the funds have to be channeled through a law enforcement agent. And it's simply because SIU has had the role, even historically, of being the custodian of this fund so that we appoint appropriate service providers. The debtors book, I think we've dealt with this. We will make sure that we classify the debtors in terms of which areas of government spheres and the aging thereof. The SABC investigation, yes indeed, we said this would be one of the areas where we would like to test our new strategy of turning the investigations around. We're happy to say that we have turned that investigation around within the prescribed period, and we have produced an interim report covering phase one. There has been various outcomes, and in line with what Honorable Van Rooyen has indicated, if there's a need for this committee for us to take them through the details of the investigations, we are happy that the committee can schedule that session for us to do that. But in this investigation, we have seen referrals for disciplinary action, referrals for criminal prosecution. In this one, I need to indicate that the prosecution turned around as quickly as we expected. One of the executives in SABC is now facing a criminal prosecution, and we are at a stage where we have civil litigations to declare some of the contracts that have been appointed in SABC to declare them irregular and set aside. So we have seen tangible outcomes within a quick timeline, and the board has acknowledged that. We continue to keep them up to date. The 2012 investigation into water affairs, we are also, in this one, we have produced reports which have been sent to the president. There was one aspect on the Vuani pipeline which was outstanding, which we have since completed that report, and it will also be sent to the president. Amongst others, there's irregularities in appointment of service providers. We have found that there's been fraudulent appointments of contractors. They've acquired fraudulent grading status through the CIDB, and that for us has been a good basis for us to attack the contracts. So, again, we do not have the details of the outcomes, which we can share with the committee at an appropriate time. Electronic monitoring in DC in correctional services, yes, this is one of the areas where we have also investigated. We have found irregularities in this space. We have found that the service provider that was appointed, they did not follow the process. And as a result, it was an irregular contract. And without the details that we have in this regard, but we are aware that correctional services, based on the findings that we made, they have since used the contractual provision to approach the service provider to terminate the contract. In this instance, the correctional services, and we are in engagement with the commissioner to say how is it that we mitigate the risk of the business need that was occasioned by the monitoring system and so on. So on how they would mitigate this system without contradicting our findings with the subject of an engagement. Proclamations, they said they were, Honorable Mulausi indicated that there were pre-proclamation engagements before. Once we receive the allegations, we do what we call pre-proclamation assessment of the allegations. And that's the part that also requires regulatory improvement. We still do that, but not necessarily with the president. We do an engagement. If the allegations point to a state institution, we assess and engage the state institution consent to ensure that the allegations are within our scope. And once we are satisfied with that, we then prepare a proclamation which goes through the process. The proclamation process has been regulated between SIU, Presidency and Justice through an MOU that we have signed. In that MOU, we have agreed on timelines, and we are seeing that the MOU is now producing the results. The proclamations are coming, are being approved within the timelines, and we are really satisfied with that. Progress on litigations, Honorable Horn, we have included the litigations in the annual report in the manner that we did, simply because we have realized that there was a risk that we needed to mitigate in terms of the details that we put in the annual report, the names of litigants and so on. But again, if there's a need for us to submit to the committee, in committee, those litigation processes, we can do that. We can submit to the committee. On Nkandla, we did say that the court date has now been set. It's in June. Were there any pre-trial engagements, any joint applications? All of those have been done. And I can see that my colleague, Dr. Wells, is nodding. He's in charge of that space now. So we are of the view that there shouldn't be any pre-litigation issues that arise. We want to push that trial goes on as scheduled. MOU with NPA, I think Honorable Chair have addressed that. That process precludes investigation by the Hawks, and I've covered that. Under irregular expenditure, how are we regularizing? I think the CFO can just address that. Chairperson, hopefully we are still within the time.
Chair, Honorable Member, the word regularize, what do we... What we understand of that practically is to try and get rid of it as soon as possible. In other words, terminate practically and then go out and tender. So the first one, the courier service, we terminated and we went on to another contract, on a transversal contract with Treasury. The travel management, we went out on tender the first time in 2017. It was found a non-responsive tender. So all of the travel management companies that gave bids in did not comply to the compulsory requirements in the tender, which was to give CVs and to give proper qualifications of the people that will deal with the account. So unfortunately we were forced to go out and tender again. We're in the final stages of awarding the travel management tender. The insurance, we have not gone on tender. We will go out on tender in the next 2 months in order to, that's an evergreen contract. It was an evergreen. So we're going out and tender in the next 2 months to replace the short-term insurance.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to address the issue around the contract that was entered into during the reorganization program. That contract has run out, has been completed, but we need to just record that there has been variations. that in terms of the PFMA, we shouldn't go beyond 15%. And those variations were caused by the length of the consultation that we had to do with the union, and they suggested, you know, a whole lot of changes on how to deal with the human resource issues. But also with regard to the new value chain, there were some of the work that we had to do to ensure that we streamline our investigations and the aspects of the investigations, so that those were not foreseen. But we have ensured that we stay within the limited PFMA level. We do not have a case management system that we have procured. The case management system that has been used is a system that was available all along in SIU. But to have it utilized, we have had to scope what is it that needed to be done to support our new case management process. So those, what needed to be done, the IT department costed what needed to be done. So we didn't go out and procure a separate case management system. Well, we were really in a process because we have identified it as a need. If there will still be a need to go out and procure a system, we'll consider that. But we want to see if what we are using already is not sufficient. And to a large extent, it has shown that it's giving us what we need. It went out on the 1st of October, and we are still testing to see whether it really gives us what we require. Okay. Honorable Van Rooyen, cooperation from the executive. The involvement of the executive is simply because the reports are sent. In terms of the law, once we've completed the investigation, the reports have to be submitted to the president. And because it becomes the president's report, in all instances, whatever needs to be done out of that report, we would then make recommendations and engage with the president's office, and hence some of the activities. But the role of the legislator, as far as we are concerned, we would like the utmost support from the legislator, particularly the portfolio committee, which we report to, in terms of ensuring that our mandate is executed appropriately. In the instance where we do not get cooperation, for example, from the state institutions not paying, this is one instance where we would like. But for example, we are now busy with the changes to the legislation, to the SIU Act, which we would like to propose. And at an appropriate time, we would engage our minister, we would engage then the portfolio committee, we would really appreciate the support in that stage. Honorable Mulauzi said referral to NPA. Are you still on it with the acting NDPP? I think we did pronounce on that. Special tribunal, we have addressed that. The audit committee, what is the delay in the appointment of the audit? We have appointed that. That has been appointed. Ms. Madali's contract has been terminated. In terms of the PFMA requirement, before we terminate any audit committee member, we have to make sure that we get concurrence from the minister. We've made that, we've got that concurrence, and the contract has been terminated. Irregular expenditure, what are you doing with it? Yes, we would like to make sure that if there's anyone that can be pointed to in terms of having been negligent or indolent in terms of doing their work, would like to ensure that there's consequence management. We take the point that on going forward, we'd probably need to format our audit committee report differently, mention the names and the number of meetings that they've attended, because I've seen in other annual reports that it's formatted in that fashion. Honorable Chair, going forward, we will depict we will depict that. Management of conflict of interest, Chairperson, Honorable Chair, we expect annually that our members declare interest or any business that they may have, and we ensure that that's in line with our conflict of interest policy. Where it is detected that there's a conflict of interest, we take action and require the members to either get out of that business, or where there's been a failure to declare, we also ensure that there's action taken. The kind of work that they do more often has been the work that says, I would like to render services to a university and lecture on like weekends and so on. So we do analyze and assess any work that needs to be done on an ongoing basis and ensure that it doesn't conflict. If it's a business venture, we also ensure that there is absolutely no conflict, and we monitor it. At any stage where the conflict is determined, we ensure that that aspect ceases. Chairperson, that is the end of responding to the members. Thank you very much.
Yes, I would like to indulge you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members. So just to add to some of the comments and responses that have been provided by Advocate Mutibi, and in particular the issue that was raised by Honorable Horn, who said that the debtor's book the last time gave an indication that it's getting better, and to his horror it looks like the reverse is happening. Yes, whilst we have managed to collect more than double of what was collected in the previous year, and whilst we will give a breakdown of which entities owe us more, remember that it is also a moving target. There has been an incline in the number of proclamations that we have received. So with more proclamations, we are issuing more invoices. So then the debtors book tends to grow again as we are doing catch-up. But we have put measures in place to ensure that we can collect more efficiently as we do that, and the updates that we are providing are assisting with that. With regard to the role of the legislature and other arms of government, I know Advocate Mutibi has also responded to that, but Honorable Faroyan, I see the fact that the President has released the report and the new strategy whereby the SIU is more proactive and engaging the departments to insist on the implementation of our recommendations. I see a new opportunity there that we can also now begin to engage the relevant portfolio committees, because they have now received the report. We will do follow-up on the implementation of the recommendations, and where we're not getting joy, we will then engage this committee and the relevant portfolio committee to make sure that the committees are aware of our recommendations and the fact that the entities are not responding to our recommendations.
Yes, thank you. I'm happy now. Honorable Member, is there any follow-up? We only have 5 minutes. Thank you, Honorable Smith. Honorable Mlauzi, Honorable Horn.
No, thank you very much. On the issue of financial performance, I'm going to ask about the surplus. You reported about the surplus, I think, from 2015-16, where the surplus, and currently the year under 2017-2018, your surplus is about 120.9 million. Then you said the SIU is affected by the baseline reduction imposed by the Treasury. The reduction by the Treasury to the entities or to the department. But how do this affect you? Because you are recording surplus, and now the year under review, the surplus is too huge. It's 120 million, 9 for 2017-2018. What effect does it have? The reduction by the department. Only the department is cutting the budget, maybe to want to use it to something like yesterday, we're using a legal aid board where the money is necessary to be there because we want the poor people to be assisted in terms of the legal representation. But you are reporting that the SIO is being affected when you are having this huge surplus. The last question is about the year under review. How many people convicted during the financial year under review out of SIU maybe cases? How many convicted? Because this thing was done of the matters in the court in South Korea, where we are hearing that. Are you securing conviction out of your investigations?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Acting Chair. I have a follow-up also in respect of the prosecutions and criminal behavior. And I hear what Mr. Mutibi says in terms of our Act says we must refer to the NPA. But with the greatest of respect, I don't think his answer suffice in the sense that the Act does not say upon the completion of an SIU investigation. So what we currently sit with is the SIU, and sometimes just from the information in front of us, sometimes after years of investigating, refer what they call a case-ready docket to the NPA, and then it's referred by the NPA for re-investigation. There should be nothing precluding them upon obtaining the first evidence pointing to criminal behavior of referring that to the NPA, who in terms of the governance framework must obviously then involve the investigative arms of the state in respect of criminal behavior. I'm really looking towards a situation where we don't see a repeat of these reports that there's let's say tension between the SIU and the NPA, because on the one hand the NPA says this, but 600 dockets has been referred to the NPA. Then the NPA come here, we confront them with this allegation that you're not serious with the types of crimes uncovered by the SIU, and they say no, but that's just not simply how it can work. So nothing in the Act with respect precludes you from, at the first indication of criminal behavior, referring these matters to the NPA, and shouldn't you consider that? Thank you.
The response in 3 minutes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable, I'll start off with Honorable Horn, the financial questions. My colleague, CFO, Honorable Horn, we do share the views, and I think that would really provide us with some meaningful insight as we engage further with the national prosecution. As part of our investigation, we do not wait until the end of the investigation before we refer matters to the NPA. At any point, if we commence investigation today, and in a month's time or in a week's time, there is evidence pointing to the commission of a crime, we then refer at that time. We put together the evidence that we have picked up, we do affidavits, and we send them to the NPA at that time. Simply because to wait until the investigation is complete would be to defeat really the process of taking action as quickly as is possible. The dual referral, that's the matter that will probably, I do agree that the legislation does not really in so many ways say we cannot. And that's the area that we would like to explore. I'm informed by my colleagues who have been here longer than me, that it used to be the case that SIU used to refer matters directly to the police. But with the changes of the heads, the previous heads, would say, let us stick to the letter of the law, which says, refer matters to the LPA. But I'm saying there's an opportunity for efficient, bringing in efficiency in the system. While we refer to the LPA, we could then record that the matter has been referred to, say the Hawks. And then we can bring in the monitoring process so that it's aligned. The LPA can then follow up with Hawks on issues that they've realized that it still needs to be plugged in. So it's really an efficiency, Honorable Chair, without contravening the law. How many convictions, Honorable Mulaudzi? As I sit here today, I do not have the number, the stats, and that's part of our engagements with our colleagues at LPA. We would like to then on an ongoing basis be informed. But Honorable Chair, we can again, with the engagement of LPA, provide the committee with the number of convictions per any period that we can cover. Baseline reduction by National Treasury and surplus, CFO, do you want to address that?
Honourable Member, if you look at the income statement on page 117, in terms of the surplus for the year, the 121 million, because the SIU draws up financial statements on what is called full accrual accounting in terms of GRAP. If you look at the income, the only income that was physically received in cash is really the government grant. If you look at what was invoiced, because of the challenge we have in debt, we have not physically received that cash yet. So the 121 million surplus is to a large extent a bit theoretical. Until we've received it in cash and we've recovered that debt, it stays a theoretical figure. What we're saying is for us to employ more investigators, you'd actually need the cash. So in terms of the baseline cuts that were effected to the tune of about 21 million, that could have funded in a year, actual forensic investigator posts. If I may, just the fact that Treasury has approved that we could retain the surplus. If we want to use that, if you look at the balance sheet again, if we want to use that cash surplus, 514 million, we would have to actually then budget for it, in a year, we would have to budget for a deficit in order to use those cash resources. Currently, the PFMA does not allow us, but if we get into the event that we have to, because of growth in proclamation, the SIU will then apply to Treasury to budget for a deficit in a specific financial year. Thank you.
Of Occupational Health Safety Act.
No, Chairperson, that's one of the apologies for that. But at the moment, I do not have the details, Chairperson, and I'll undertake that. We'll go back, and yes, we'll give you the written response on that. Thank you.
All right. Honourable members and the head of SIU and your team, thank you so much for everything, for the presentation, for the accurate presentation, the accurate questions and accurate responses. And then as to matters which we requested of a statistical nature, we request that you respond in writing, and other issues which we may make a follow-up on. We give you up to 14 days to respond, 14 days from today, including weekends, to respond to with your respect. Yes. Okay, thank you. Have a safe flight. And then, honorable members, will be meeting with Sheriff Bot. We can have a 10-15 minute break and be back by quarter to 12. My apologies.
I'm going to go to the hospital.
Let's bring up the target. It's a very important thing because I also can report that they've met all of them now. The target doesn't speak.
Sit here and Because exactly, and the content I think they must partner to be upskilled by GSTV so that they can get more skills and develop more content. And I think it was lunch news, ne? They called me in the morning for, I think, for 1 o'clock.
What were you? Oh.
It was a Monday. They interviewed me on Monday. Then they played in I'm waiting for Anika to finish to so I can summarize everything that leads you to interview and the ENT. So I'm waiting for
you. You are official spokesperson.
No, the committee.
The committee. You are media face.
I want to take a minute.